Hello, everyone, and welcome to Femme on Creatives. I am here with the wonderful Katie Bass, a illustrator who I was fortunate enough to meet at a con. I met her at Milton Keynes Film and Comic Con, and as soon as I saw her work, I was like, I need you to come on Femme on Creatives. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. We have actually, confession time, recorded an episode, but it was basically the two of us just having incredibly fun and random chats, and people didn't really get to learn about you as much as I hoped, because we just got really excited about things in general and talked for a long time. But it was brilliant. I mean, I have just told you I listened back to it, but the again, like I said, people didn't really get to learn about you, and that's what I really want, because I loved your art so much when I saw it. I still love it, and I bought your graphic novel and got to read it and wanted to talk to you about that as well. So here we are. We are back again. Tell everybody about yourself.
Hello, I'm Katie. I do a lot of illustration, primarily comics, but I like to refer to myself as an illustrator because I like to not pigeonhole myself.
Love that. Very good. What would you say your work mostly focuses on?
Mostly like fantasy sort of stuff. Yeah.
That was a leading question, because that is what I want to talk about.
Okay.
You know this, I have already said to you. I gave you, I was like, thing, I'm going to be focused, the things that I want to talk to you about. So your work is so interesting to me. One of the things I noticed both at the con when I met you and then looking at your work afterwards, and we've sort of talked about separately, as in not recorded for a podcast, is around the fantasy elements of your work and around how you've brought diversity into that. So things about some of like the fairy tales that we know of and things like that. What is it about that fantasy element and diversity that you really like to bring into your work?
I definitely think in terms of like film genres, fantasy definitely has a lot more diversity within them, like with races, like age, all sorts of that, stuff like that. And it allows you to experiment more with it rather than going for just like a straight up rom-com or something, because generally speaking, the two leads in a rom-com are nearly always white. So kind of want to give a bit more representation to the people who probably need it a bit more than, well, white people. I say that as a white person.
But that's good. You're being an ally. We're here to be allies. That's amazing. Mm. What sort of stuff do you get inspiration from?
Most, I read a lot of Korean sort of mangas, but they're called manhwa, I think. So I read quite a lot of those, and I definitely really like my comics. I just like the storytelling element of it. And then if the art's really good, I love that too.
I like that. And I think, guess that sort of brings in a different influence as from what you said, like straight white guys usually. I mean, I definitely think the comic world and illustration has gotten so much more diverse, but I'm probably a bit older than you, but that sort of, and fantasy storytelling was very much from that perspective. And I think it's really exciting to sort of see it coming from other sources. And you've done some like reimagining of stuff, haven't you, of like some Disney princesses.
I did some modern alternative universes of some Disney princesses. Well, I saw someone else doing it, so yeah, I did a Me Too. But it's like I wanted to do my own version of it because I thought it was quite a funky thing to do, and it's like I don't like doing fan arts just straight up, so I was like, okay, that actually works quite well. I like that.
How do you, that's really interesting, you saying you don't like doing fan art straight up. Do you then change it to be into your style?
Pick out elements of the original film that you really like and then make them stand out a bit or emphasize on them. So for example, I did a fan art of Tangled, and I chose to emphasize the color scheme and the lanterns in one of the background paintings, and while seeking sort of like the Rapunzel elements, so like the massive or really long silky hair, getting that in there into the foreground and having her painting, because she paints a lot in the film and stuff like that.
Yeah, so,
and I thought dungarees would just be cute.
I love the dungarees so much. Yeah, so you've got her paint. So you're illustrating her while she's painting. I mean, you could do one of those like infinite pictures of that, couldn't
Oh
you?
God, it'd be paintception.
Nice. What about when it comes to some of your original works? I noticed that you did some sort of D&D characters and things like that. How do you, what is, I guess what I'm really trying to ask with all of these questions is, what is your process? And I know that's like a question that's really hard to answer, but I want people to learn about you and the things that you are interested in. So let me ask the question again.
I guess I get inspired by like young adult novels, so like A Court of Thorn and Roses, anything by Holly Black, and then I kind of reimagine it all in my head and then take influences from that and then try to do something of my own similar, I guess. Yeah. I know it's really vague, but
No, but you say it
it
so
makes sense in my head.
You say it so simply. But I used to love art and illustration, and it was something I've always wanted to do, and I've been trying to do it again. And I find it really difficult to find the time, but I also find it really difficult to get what's in my head down onto paper as such. And I think that's such a unique skill in terms of storytelling with illustration, that I just find it so interesting that you're like, well, it's just in, I just reimagine it in my head and then I just draw it.
It's been a process. I'm not gonna like sugarcoat it or something. You at uni we were forced to do outside live drawing, so you build up a bank of images in your head somewhat.
What's that? What's outside live drawing?
The technical name is plein air, and you basically draw anywhere and everywhere in public. It's daunting, and it's quite scary when you're doing it because the general public are just like looking at you, and you're like, "Please go away."
Did you have people nosing over your shoulder? Really?
Yes.
That's a lot of pressure.
I mean, some of my classmates got commissions out of it, so hats off to them.
That's amazing. Would you ever do like Portrait Artist of the Year? And because they have crowds just come in and watch the work that they're doing. Could you do that?
I've actually never heard of that, so I'll have to have a look at it.
Oh my God, it's so good. So it's literally that. So they invite artists. So artists put submissions in of portraits, self-portraits, and then they choose them and then they take them into heats. And basically they then get like a famous person who sits for them. I am not doing a great job of describing Portrait Artist of the Year.
It's
so much
good.
Better than this. And so then they draw them, and so three of the artists will have the famous person / celebrity / well-known person, and then that person will then choose a portrait to take home with them. They get to keep one, and the rest, like the panel, choose some finalists who then all go to the like semi-finals and then the finals and stuff like that, and they get a commission that gets hung in a gallery. It's amazing. It's absolutely, it's so addictive. It's so good. It's such pleasant TV. But I guess you wouldn't be too keen. Or maybe you are now. Maybe you've lost
it. I'm intrigued.
But you sit at cons, don't you? And
yeah, and sketch,
which is what I thought was really fascinating when I met you as well.
That has taken some getting used to, but it's also my main money maker at cons, so kind of have to.
So tell me more about cons. When did you first start joining them and having stands and stuff?
I think I did my first one as soon as I could drive, so at 17.
Wow,
it was a
that's
local
amazing.
one, a local small one. It wasn't like a big one, and back then I had it was mostly postcard prints and doodling then and there, but not for very much. So I think I made like 70 quid on my first con, and I was like, oh my God, that's so much money.
I mean, it's 17, that is.
I mean, it's well, 70 quid is still a lot of money anyway, but it's like at a con now, I'm pulling in probably averaging about 300 now. So I mean, there's some improvement.
So where did it go from that first con? Did you just really enjoy the atmosphere, or was it all about the money? And then
bit
you're
both.
Like, oh, I'm gonna do more.
It was a bit of both, and it was just nice to get into that environment where everyone had something in common. Yeah, because I was still in school, so everyone who I knew was basically from school, and sometimes, well, let's just say like views didn't always align. And like interests definitely did not align.
Yeah.
So it was nice to get into an environment one where I could make a few more friends within that community.
Yeah, definitely. And that means so much, doesn't it? But when did you then tell me more about how you then started signing up to other cons? Was it sort of addictive? I've made these friends, they're going to other cons. How did it all work?
It was definitely addictive. So once you're like, oh, I can make money out of this. Oh, shiny. And then you just start booking loads. But I think I roughly, from when I was 17, I think I started doing them probably, I think I did them twice a year throughout uni, just small ones again. But then outside of uni, I think I gave it a break for a year or two, and then I went in for about three or four. And then this year and last year, I've done about 10 each year, and next year I have about 20 booked. So
20 booked in
yeah,
one year.
I think I'm gonna be very tired next year.
Yeah, that's amazing though. Would you say your experience at cons have evolved? So, when you first went, was it a bit intimidating, and now you're just there with, like I said, just sketching away with all the confidence?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm still intimidated by the idea of going into London for one of the big ones. So I stick with the Birmingham ones at the ANEC. They're more my size of fence.
What's the thing you enjoy most at cons?
Really meeting new people. I mean, the money helps, but meeting new people.
And like a real sense of community, isn't it? I get the feeling you were maybe a bit like me. I was sort of considered a bit weird.
Absolutely. I was
Yeah.
definitely considered the weirdo. And if anyone is listening to this, yeah, you call me a weirdo. So, yeah, I am the weirdo. I'm owning my shit.
Yes. Oh my God, I totally own being a weirdo. Absolutely. I know I am, and it's fine. Like, for me, my revelation was moving to London, and then I realized, oh, okay, I can just be me. Nobody really thinks I'm weird because there's weirder people than you in London, and it's great.
Gosh,
Yeah.
you're brave.
I'm not suggesting you move to London, but like, it's great. You find people who respect who you are and what you're interested in, they have the same interests. And it really helps, doesn't it? It really helps you be you. There you go. That was a little life lesson for everyone. Find people who help you be you and be more authentic to yourself. What's been your best con experience?
Oh, it was definitely at Amichibi. So that's a con held in Northampton in one of the hotels. It was such a small room, but every trader was so lovely to each other. It was just generally so supportive. Like, go up to Lou and no one would, and everyone would like watch a stall. It's fantastic.
I really like that. Do you get sort of, do you then all have like a little trader WhatsApp group and stuff like
There is an Artist Alley Discord, and there's
Nice.
probably about 200 odd artists in there already. And it is, let's just say I have to put my phone on mute because of how many
But
notifications go off.
that must be really good. So I presume sort of like you all sort of share work and ideas and critique, and also sort of just sort of bounce some stuff around.
Yeah, there's a constructive criticism thread, and then there's also like a document in there of where all of the cons are, which I think from a competitive advantage point of view is quite annoying because everyone's got access to it and everyone knows which ones they want to go to, and then you can just see everyone applying for the same ones. And when you go to a bit as an event goer, you might be like, oh, I see them all every single time, which is good from like a repeat customer point of view. But like if you're going there time and time again, you want to see new people, not so great.
Yeah, and I assume you go as a customer as well, right? You are there to obviously show your work and sell your work, but you want to be part of the,
Oh yeah,
going to the people's.
I check out Artist Alley every single time.
Yeah.
I like seeing everyone's work, and then if I see a sketchbook, I'm like, come to mummy.
There you go. That's how you empty out Katie's bank account.
Yep.
Sketchbooks.
I just like seeing the process behind everything. It's like the raw sketches show the raw skill behind it, and then you see the final rendered piece, and it's like, how did you get from there to there? Like, wow.
I mean, and do you literally ask that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My last event this Sunday was Out of This World in Sheffield, and the young lady sat next to me had the most beautiful line art, but it wasn't line art. She said like she hated doing line art, and she would then she said it's just a tidied up sketch, and I was like, that's genius. That's absolute genius.
Reframing it, I think, is really important to make it more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And for me, I've noticed going to cons that it, I mean, I say it like I go to loads all the time, but I've been to a few over the years. It's something that we were just talking about at the very beginning, which I sort of moved on from because I got overexcited again, which is around that diversity. So we're, you know, I've noticed since when I first started going, like 15 years ago or something, that there is a difference in the people who are attending. There's all different types of people now. It used to be, you know, I used to be one of the very few women there.
Yeah.
And now there's, you know, the range of people, and there's families, old, young, men, women, everything. And I think
Everyone
that's
in
really
between.
amazing. Yeah, exactly. Like I think it's really opened up to more people. And I'm not gatekeepery about being geeky. I actually think the more people who are better, and the better. That's not really a question, but I'm going to let you take it.
Okay. Are we in reference to my book? I don't know.
Okay, so one of the things I noticed about your work is, so it's not just diversity in terms of skin color and race. You know, there are fantasy is often filled with skinny women with big
Oh,
boobs
okay.
and stuff like that. And you know, your
Body
work,
shapes.
yeah, your work represents different body shapes. So, you know, you've got different skin colors, races, different body shapes. I feel, I don't know, maybe I'm reaching, but what I really enjoyed about your work is it didn't feel like when I go to see illustrations at cons, it is often women dressed as superheroes with giant tits
And skimpy outfits.
and skimpy outfits, exactly.
I'll definitely say that I draw for the female gaze rather than the male gaze. I draw for women. That's what I draw for. That's who I draw for. I draw for you. And I'm very proud to say that my Instagram demographics say it's like 50 to 60% women, and then like 40 odd percent men. And I was like, I love this.
I feel like this has got a really obvious answer, but you know, what is it about? Why is it you draw for the female gaze?
There's not a lot out there for us. We need our gaze fed. We need to see the hands. We need to see the hand gestures and the soft touches and the
I love that so much. It's so true.
gazes. And there's the not so subtle glances of, oh, he glanced over at me. Ooh.
So good. How are you transferring that into your work, though? Like, this is the sort of stuff I'm fascinated by.
Okay, so this is probably going to be more in the next comic that I write, where I'm going to have the snappy gazes going across. Just really getting that slow burn is what I want to do. I want to do a slow burn because they're way more satisfying to write, illustrate, and consume as a reader. Like you get some books where they're written obviously, like for blokes who are like their primary audience, and it's like wham bam done, sealed the deal. And it's like for women, but for books aimed at women, it's like the slow burn, and it's like, and then you get to the point where like maybe I don't know, maybe they just shared their first kiss or something, and you're just like, oh, and you might scream in the page and stuff and do the happy dance movements and stuff like that. Whereas like books written for men is like, oh, they did that, did they? Oh well.
They did it and it's over and done with.
Yeah.
How do you, gosh, I mean, I'm looking forward to the next book. So, I mean, we'll get talking about Reverie in a minute, I think. One of the things that you're talking about there is like transferring that onto into an in illustration and a story. I guess, I mean, and this is probably really obvious, but I guess you're really like planning that out when you're putting the comic together. Are you
Yeah.
ever, has there ever been a time you're like, okay, so I want it to be like a slow touch of the hand, and then you're like, no, I need to add in two extra panels
Oh,
to make it even
absolutely.
slower.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely. It's like, so with my first draft of the one I'm working on at the moment, I think I've been through like 12 drafts maybe, and each time I'm just like, okay, so I got from chapter 1 to chapter 12 and they've already kissed, and I was like, that's too soon. That's not realistic enough. That needs to add a few more chapters in between. They're
I love that.
moving too quick.
Two more chapters of just longing glances and
Absolutely. And then maybe it looks like the, I don't know, maybe like getting the small of the back touched, like supported and stuff like that, like walking past and like, say, so the squeezing past, and they put the hand on the small of the back, and then you just see that they'll maybe like they trail the finger across or something. It's like it's very flirt. This is flirty context, not creepy. Yeah,
Yeah, it's all
it's
consensual. It's
all
all, everybody's
consensual.
happy about it.
Yeah, and it's just those details like that where it becomes a. It's almost, I guess you could say, you're seducing the reader.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh my
I
God, I'm
agree.
seducing the It's like fanfiction.net all over again on
I love fan fiction.
what it is, though, isn't it? It's like everything on fanfiction is just, it oozes sex appeal, but like it sometimes it's so well done and it's so, it takes you so long from A to B. I think that some like readers might actually fall in love with the characters a bit more in that sense, and then you get really attached to them as well. Whereas like other ones, you probably not as much.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Yeah, you made me think of like two things. These are very weird cultural touch points, which to be fair, I
I
do quite a lot. So the first is Terrace House. Have you ever watched Terrace House?
I've heard of it.
Oh my God. I mean, it ended quite badly because there was an awful tragedy that happened. One of the people who were in it took their own life, and it was very upsetting. But before all of that, it's basically like a Japanese TV show, dating show, and they
Yeah.
get put in a house and then they couple off. And like you'll watch it, and it will literally take like 20 episodes for two of them to hold hands and be like, I want to go on a date with you. And it is just the most adorable, like slow burn thing ever. Like it's absolutely amazing. Please, I said that something terrible happened, but please, if you can watch Terrace House,
I think I have.
it's like, I'm all for people who love reality TV, like Love Island and stuff like that. If you love it, you love it. I don't care. You enjoy it, please do. But like, this is my like romance reality TV stuff. And then the other thing you're talking about, this is very, I think I'm definitely reaching, is my daughter watches Miraculous, like Ladybug and Cat Noir. And it's like a French Japanese animation, which comes together so weirdly, but in the best way. And the two main characters like fancy each other, but they never get together. And it's very adorable because it captures for me that teenager thing of like, oh my God, Adrian really liked the cake that I made. And like she gets really excited. And I was like, because that's what it's like when you're a teen. Like, you know, and you're in love and you fancy someone, obviously without being superheroes and stuff like, I mean, maybe you are. But like, I really love that about it because it feels really accurate. Like it reflects what it's like when you really fancy somebody and they do like the smallest thing and you think it's the best thing that's ever happened. So when you were talking then, they were my two cultural touch points. What? Do you have any? I mean, you also sounded like very Jane Austen-y when talking about it as well.
I was thinking of Jane Austen when I was talking about it.
Nice.
I grew up on period history dramas, so I love that sort of stuff.
What are some of your favourites?
Vanity Fair.
Oh, good choice. Wow, Becky Sharp.
I quite like the Netflix adaptation of Persuasion. Like, I know not everyone likes it, but I think it's just because I'm a Dakota Johnson fan.
Oh, I see. I've not watched it, and I'm also not a Dakota Johnson fan. Controversial. She seems lovely as a person, but as an actress, she doesn't really do anything for me. She leaves me quite cold.
Okay.
But, you know, I also think keep on acting, go for it, do your job.
Yeah.
Like, I can't stand again. People be like, oh, you're the worst person ever. I'm like, cool, keep working. What other sort of like period drama influences have you got going on here?
Gosford Park.
I was just talking about Gosford Park with someone and how it is the weirdest period drama film that exists, and I love it.
I think it's by the same people who did Downton Abbey.
It is, yes. So Downton Abbey is like a spiritual predecessor or successor. I can't remember.
Like that, yeah.
Because I can't remember like the date timelines of it. Yeah. But I mean, Gosford Park is just bonkers. I adore that film. I think because I keep on talking about it, I'm going to have to go and watch it. Would you ever do a period drama? Like graphic novel.
I don't think I have the knowledge to do one accurately.
Why do you have to do it accurately?
Because I feel like you have to get the clothing right and everything for it, and I just don't. Part of me is quite lazy, and I feel like it's too much effort. That's why I go to fantasy. I'm lazy.
Because you can just make that.
Yep.
Let's talk about Reverie. So while we're talking about the undertones of social commentary, thank you for the little reminder, let's move on to Reverie. When I talked about it with you last time, I did a terrible description of it. I basically did what I always do, which was just sort of very randomly describe the plot. I will leave it in your capable hands as the creator of this comic book to tell us all about Reverie.
You say that, but I'm also a terrible blurb writer. I'm thinking of actually rewriting the blurb on it. Because I was keeping it way too vague, and it's not, I think the vagueness is just too vague, and it just needs maybe, like, I don't know, maybe a little taste of spoiler or something just to hook people in.
Well, let's talk about it with spoilers.
Okay.
If you're happy to. Reverie.
Reverie is a comic about three girls who go on an after school excursion where they decide to go to an abandoned fun fair, because who doesn't want to go to an abandoned fun fair when you're a teenager? And they get into a lot of trouble.
Oh, those teenagers.
Absolutely. But the trouble they get into isn't the typical trespassing or, well, getting hurt. I suppose one of them does get hurt, but then just kind of turns out fine. It's more one of them is experiencing, I hesitate to use the phrase mental breakdown, but she's going through a lot of stuff in her head from having a not so strong relationship with her mum, which does get rectified. And because she feels like she was abandoned because she was sent away for her own good. She is unfortunately the one who ends up in a spot of bother. And during that spot of bother, she finds herself, finds her inner strength, and continues. I really want to put a semicolon in my book now. Because of what it represents, I really want to put a semicolon in it. For anyone who doesn't know what a semicolon represents, it represents is typically people have it tattooed somewhere on their body, and it means basically to continue, because the story because whenever you get a semicolon in a sentence, it kind of separates the first part of the sentence and then it continues. And people who have experienced depression, or if they're very unfortunate enough, suicidal ideation, they tend to get that tattoo. And I kind of want to put that in my book now. Because I think it would be a nice addition.
I think it'd be a nice addition. I also think for me, this book really feels like a prologue.
It
Like
does, and
there is,
it is a
well,
prologue.
there you go. Oh, look at me. I know what I'm doing when I read stuff.
It
You
is setting it up for the second installment. I'm unsure whether or not there'll be a third installment of it, but it's kind of like, sorry, that was my finger sliding against the wooden thing and it sounded like a fart.
I'll cut that bit out.
I
I
don't
didn't
know
hear
if
it,
I
but
don't know if it opened. I mean, you can leave that in because I think that'll make people giggle. But I've lost my train of thought now.
well, what I think would be really helpful, again, I talked about spoilers and I feel like you're talking around spoilers, is to talk about the main character. I mean, I'm trying to not do spoilers. I just said spoilers are fine. And yeah, I mean, it definitely feels like the start. It's interesting that there might not be a third part. I'm interested in exploring that because I feel
Yeah.
like there's so much more to come. I guess the second book's going to be a really big one.
I think it will be, yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll have to split that into two just so it feels a bit more paced.
A part one and a part two.
Yeah.
And in the story, so it is set in the real
Place
world.
called, no, it's called, it's set in a place called Rayard, which, if I remember correctly, I took off Google Translate under like Celtic or Scottish Gaelic for like high forest or something. I'm hoping it do. I'm hoping that's translated correctly, because if not, I'm in trouble.
But it's as if, you know, you could it'd be as if we were going to explore a fun fair and
Yeah.
then mystical, magical things happen. So there's the fantasy element. I mean, it is a fantasy novel, in my opinion. You can tell me that I'm wrong.
No, it's fantasy.
Good. Oh, I started to, you know, beforehand I was like, oh, you know, it feels very much like a prologue and being like really proud of myself for it. And then I was still like, oh, am I saying the wrong things?
it's I've kind of set up the world building so it mirrors our own, because I felt it would be more relatable that way for the readers. I want to instill a sense of familiarity with the characters in it. So what I've noticed is that when I go to cons, it's generally the parents that will pick it up. And then, because I've always said it's quite an intense read, just because I think I have the tendency to censorship myself with it. And the parents, I've had one parent come up to me at a book fair and say, "You don't need to censor this. This is absolutely fine. Like, kids are learning about this in school." So I've now since started selling it to the younger audience who I wanted to start selling it to, because they're the ones going through the difficult times with themselves. Because, like, puberty is horrendous. Like, you'll get some kids who will go for it and they'll be fine. And then you'll get others who go for it. And that's when, well, the world basically gets torn apart by mental illness. So I wanted to give kids that age something to give them hope, I guess, and to see them through to the later years. Because there's a lot of kids out there that are really struggling.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, yeah, this is a book for teenagers who have ever had, who feel untethered during their teenage years, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it is a difficult book in terms of the things it's dealing with. So you talked about suicide, mental health, not knowing your place in the world, and basically just feeling, for me, untethered is kind of a word I think of when I think of the story that you're telling in Reverie.
Ungrounded is quite
ungrounded,
a good one as
well. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think even without the fantasy elements, so many teenagers, especially teenage girls, teenage boys as well,
I think they have a tendency to hide it because of like the social messaging that blokes get of like, you cannot have feelings, you are not allowed to feel anything. But yeah, this is probably aimed more towards girls, but boys will be able to relate to it as well.
Yeah, definitely. And the three protagonists are girls as well.
Yeah.
But I do feel like, you know, it's really important that boys are included in these conversations and know that it's normal for them as well. I mean, the teenage, everybody's hormonal during their teenage years. Yeah. I don't understand these teenagers who are like swanning through it. I'm like, how? It's a nightmare.
Well, if we put, I don't think a lot of people even get out of the emotionality of being a teen, because like as adults, like after, well, during puberty, you get exposed to all hormones, but after that, the hormones don't really leave you, do they? So you're still as emotional as you were with a teen. Maybe you're just better equipped to deal with it. I don't know.
There you go. But I actually think there's some truth to that, isn't there? Isn't it? You know, our brains are still mushy until sort of like early 20s or something like that.
Yeah.
I could have made up the age, but I think that's about right. So, yeah, I mean, I was certainly still not a steady human being, still not, you know, had a lot of therapy.
Same.
Yeah. Love me a bit of therapy.
Highly recommend everybody goes to therapy. Just going to advocate that right now, because it can save you quite well.
Yeah, saved my life a couple of times. I'm not gonna lie, it's been therapy should just be free for everybody all the time.
Absolutely.
So there's loads of themes. I'm just gonna move on before I start revealing more things about myself.
So
it is
I
yeah
go.
But there's loads of themes throughout Reverie. What is it? Well, what was your process of putting it together? Did you have the story first, or did you start thinking about the characters first? How did it all come together?
I wrote the story first because I was going through a difficult time during university, so it kind of came naturally from that. And then I started illustrating it as part of my final major project. And I published it as well, because I was like, I am not doing this uni project without getting anything out of this financially. Uni made me go to therapy, so you know what? I'm bloody getting my money out of it.
Was it hard getting the going through that process then, or did that feel like an extension of therapy?
It felt like an extension of therapy because I was expressing feelings that I couldn't really safely express without doing it creatively. I have since then found that kickboxing also helps.
Well, you've about to ruin my point, which was like, this is why arts and creatives are so important in education without people's life. But instead, just go and hit some stuff.
Yeah, it works. But arts is definitely a very safe outlet. And it's also probably one of the more affordable ones as well.
What was the process of getting it published? Like, so you're working through stuff, you're getting it down on paper, you're building a story, you're building these characters, you're building the world. What, you know, what is all of that, basically? How does all that work?
I made sure all of the inner pages are the same size, went to a online printer and typed in how many pages I had, and they gave me a spine depth, and then I made the cover. And then I went to that printer again to get about 50 copies printed. Yeah.
You make it sound so easy.
It is. It is really accessible. Like, if you want to publish your own book, it is so accessible to do so these days. It's like Amazon has made it so much easier. Just make sure you get your ISBN number.
Yes, of course.
Otherwise you can't have it on Amazon.
You can't have it there, can you?
Yeah, you need to get your ISBN number, people. So I did not do that.
Is part two, is the second book, dealing with the same sort of things, or is it more about healing?
It'll
And
be healing. Yeah.
yeah.
She needs to come out of her darkness. She needs to come into the light.
Are you going to tell us more or make us read it?
I don't know yet because I've only written like, I don't know, a few chapters of it. So it's going to be an exploratory phase as well. So maybe you have to read it.
So what's the process of making the second book then?
Same as the first, I
Is
guess.
it so you're like, this is tried and tested for me, sticking with it?
I guess, yeah.
How long did it take you to do the first one, and do you think the second one's going to take as much time or more or less, or are you an expert now and just going to bang it out?
Oh gosh, no. First one probably took about 8 weeks at uni because it was the first ever
Wow,
rendition because it was a
eight
final major
weeks.
project. Yeah, it was a rush job. And then for the revision of it, I think I took 8 months roughly to do it because I did it over lockdown and everything.
And so, yeah, definitely a lot longer for the second book
Yeah,
then.
probably like a year or two.
What are your aspirations for the second one?
Raise more awareness, I guess. And it's just nice to have another book out, I think. It's quite
Feels like an,
satisfying.
yeah, feels like an achievement. What would be your ultimate illustration writing goal? I presume doing something like this full time.
Yeah, definitely. I could do it full time, that would be amazing, but I'm also a realist and it probably won't happen.
What is it about creativity and the arts that you think is really important?
Self-expression, definitely that. And being able to vent anything you want without, well, I suppose it's like you will get judgment, but like it's not the harsh judgment, it's the judgment to understand it more. Because I think something said, if you don't understand it, then it's art. And I was like, oh, I like that. There should always be like an element of wonder or curiosity behind it, like making you want to, with comics, turn the page. But with like, I don't know, fine art, you just like, what on earth?
What is there anything about the creative process that you think people don't really get to have a glimpse of?
This thinking that goes in, so on inside my head, because I'm really bad at explaining it.
But then surely that comes out. Is that not the process, that it's in your head and then it comes out?
I think I surprise myself a lot of the time with what comes out onto the page.
Oh, really? Tell me more
Yeah.
about that.
Is sometimes I just get like the vaguest of ideas. It's not even like an idea at that point, and then doodle something, and it's like, oh, I'll do that some more, and then maybe it'll come out nice or something. A lot of time it just comes out and I was like, oh, that's naff, throw it in the bin. Yeah, there's a lot of failures before you get to something good. And I think that's important to remind people is like what you see as a finished final rendered piece is a lot of hard work. It's not something that they can just do out there.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, it's important to remember when you see people's art in the real li in real life. And they're asking money for it, and people are like, oh, £5. You're like, no, £15. Like, they're still probably pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of time and effort I put into it, and like, it's original work. But I also, you know, I think people need to pay more for art. I know it's not accessible for everybody, but it is, you know, incredible work that people have done. But I also think that's really important to remember in social media and what people are posting. And when people are posting art, that is hours of work of ones that haven't gone into that work that you don't want to post, right? And then you finally think, oh, I'm proud enough of this one's good enough to post. Katie, welcome. Thank you so much for talking to me today, firstly, for the second time, and indulging me being less tangential and trying to be quite serious with my questions. It's been hard, everybody, holding them in. But where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram, so type in K Bass Illustration You can also find me on Facebook and even TikTok.
Oh,
All
you're
of the same
young.
things.
You're young
I'm
on
28.
TikTok.
I'm not young. I'm 28.
Oh, that's very young.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I have once again loved this chat, and maybe we should have you on to talk about some period drama films at some
Happily.
point. That'd be
That'd be
excellent.
amazing.
So yeah, go check out Katie's work. Like I said, we were going around MK Film and Comic Con, and obviously there were so many amazing things there, and your work made us stop in our tracks and look at it. So that's how I feel about it. It was amazing. And then I talked to you and got reverie from you, and support independent artists and give them all your hard-earned cash. Also follow Katie, and thank you so much for talking to me.